Information Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Episode 85, Cinderella, Mason Dubs.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I am your host, Mason Smith, animation extraordinaire to be someday. And I'm here with my lovely co-hosts, Morgan Stradling and Chelsea Robson. Say hello.
Hello. Hi.
Right. So this is the Animation Addicts Podcast. If this is your first time viewing one, congratulations. Two, stay here forever with us.
Forever.
Okay. So what we do is we are three friends who are animation addicts. We don't just like animation. We love it. And the whole format of the show is basically we're sitting around talking about how much we love animation, and specifically we tend to review one animated film per episode. And so we have a lot of laughs, and we go over the artistic, the technical stuff, potential controversies, and just an all-around good time talking about how much we love the beautiful medium of storytelling that is animation. So welcome. And if you're a recurring listener, welcome again.
Salagadoola, Mitchagaboola, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Put them together and what have you got? Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Salagadoola, Mitchagaboola, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. It'll do magic, believe it or not. Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Now Salagadoola means a Mitchagaboola.
Now, we're heading into one of our listeners' favorite parts of the show. We don't do this every time, but every once in a while, we have something called the Nerdy Couch Discussion.
Can you imagine three nerds sitting on a couch? What are they discussing?
Random
nerdy stuff, right? That is exactly what we are doing here in this segment. And actually, we haven't had like a real solid Nerdy Couch Discussion in a while, I don't think.
It has been a while.
No, not like an official one on the books.
Yeah. According to the book. And so, yeah, we're super excited. And this one revolves around a piece of mail that we got, right?
Yes. So, yes, we did cut the mailbag. Wah, wah. But we did. There were some, you know, last minute stragglers. And this was a recommendation for a Nerdy Couch Discussion. And I didn't feel that it was appropriate to talk in our final mailbag. So I carried it over to here. And I thought it was really great. And it's something that we've maybe touched on a little bit, but I wanted a formal, or I guess we're on couches, informal discussion about it. So
we're on a formal couch.
Oh, a formal couch. Oh, it's one of those. You know, all this tuffeting and rivets and stuff. Yes, yes. So this email is from Sarah, and the title is The Big Three Princesses, Why So Much Hate Nowadays? And she says, hey, Rotoscopers, congratulations on finally reviewing all of the first three princess films by Walt Disney. I think it's perfect time to do a Nerdy Couch Discussion on them. Here are some questions to consider. Why do you think there is so much dislike for Snow White, Cinderella, and Aurora? Do you think they're weak characters? How come people still think these women need to be saved or wait for a man even though they weren't? Happy New Year, Sarah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
See, at first when I read that, I was like, wait, there's hate for Snow White?
Yeah, I gotta agree with Chelsea. I don't know about any hate for them.
Oh, I know about the hate.
But I do remember some of the hate. But Morgan, I'm sure it can say it a lot better than me.
Please enlighten us, Morgan.
So basically nowadays, you know, these three princesses get a lot of flack for basically being quote unquote weak characters, meaning that, you know, they sit around, you know, and they wait for a prince to save them. They aren't very proactive in their own destiny. And, you know, as a result, they're not great role models for women. And it's more of a feminist sort of view on the princesses. And they say, well, we don't like those princesses. Let's compare to these other princesses. You know, most of the time, they're probably not even comparing to princesses, but just other women who are just really strong, fit, you know, they don't necessarily have to be fit, but strong characters, and they're independent.
They have to be warriors.
And they take things into their own hands. And personally, starting Morgan rant right now, I think that is totally off base. And this is a piece of literary work, let alone it's a fairy tale from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. But even nonetheless, if this were made today, I would still be fine with someone being a damsel in distress. Like, is this basically saying that we can never have women in our films which are damsels? No, because there are situations where there are situations where some women are damsels, and maybe because of their situation in life or whatever, they need to be rescued. That does not make them less of a woman. That does not make them less of a role model. But yeah, they still are perfectly fine characters. Cinderella is probably one of my favorite of these original princesses. Aurora is great too, but yes. So I'm going to stop for now. I'm going to let you guys talk, and then I will come back because I have even more thoughts. But what do you guys think? So that is setting the stage of the hate.
Well, also one of the other, I guess, things that they don't like is the fact that they are weak in character development. And to some degree, I can see that to be true. Like, for example, each one of them, you don't really know what their innermost desires are, you know, in the way that we would say that I know exactly what Ariel wants. You know, Ariel wants this, and this is who she is. But at the same time, I feel like you do it's not an intrusive way, but it's kind of like an external presence. You just kind of see them, and you can tell that they have... that they do have character and they do want to kind of move forward and have, you know, something going on in their lives. Obviously, this is my part of the agreement with Morgan rant. but that is also one of the things that they throw out there, that it's weak in character development. Mason, what do you say?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Well, actually, okay. Well, you put me on the spot. Here we go. Would you like a man's perspective?
I would, yeah.
All right, here's the deal. By now, I think the whole so-called feminist argument against damsels in distress like this is a little unfounded, because if you look at heroines in Disney films, very few of them are actually these helpless damsels who, you know, like Snow White, they see like a scary tree and they lose their... they lose their crap and, you know, completely helpless. Cinderella doesn't fit into that category anyway, because she wasn't in any... if you look at it a certain way, it wasn't like she needed to be saved. She was saved by herself and her own, her own dreams, you know, which is kind of the magic that powered what happened to her, the good fortune with the fairy godmother and stuff. And so to argue that, well, we need to argue today in 2015 that, well, we need less of these helpless damsels in distress is a little dumb, because there's none of that anymore. Pop culture Hollywood has already established that, you know, there really aren't going to be any of these super helpless, not strong warrior ladies, you know, in films. So I think they need to give it a rest in love history for history's sake. And
exactly.
I don't think they're weak characters. Cinderella didn't need to be constant. You don't need to remake Cinderella or Aurora or Maleficent into these characters who are constantly at odds with their male counterparts just to pay a supposed debt to society. Cinderella has great qualities. And while I won't, while I'm not going to raise my children, if they're daughters, hopefully I won't have this conversation with my boys, but if they like Cinderella, then I can use this with them, that they don't have to be a princess. I don't expect them to be a royal princess, but I do expect them to, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I expect them to have the good qualities that Cinderella has.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to have the expectation that my little girls have to act exactly like a prim and proper princess who is waiting for their Prince Charming, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think it's a weak argument to say, well, you have to take Cinderella as she is in the movie, all of her or nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to make up the straw man argument or straw woman argument about why these characters were supposedly weak is silly. And so I'm trying to be tactful here, but it's kind of a dumb argument. But I'd be interested to read about what this supposed mass dislike for Snow White, Cinderella, and Aurora.
We'll have to pull some articles for you.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, first, you know, I know we're talking about mostly Cinderella because this is the episode. But, you know, even thinking about Snow White, you know, she is a princess who by stepmother comes in control, and basically it's similar to Cinderella, makes her a slave in her own home. She's had a horrible life. She's been a slave with no pay and just horrible. There's no goal or future for her. She is able to escape through, you know, the kindness of the huntsman. And let's not forget that Cinderella, that Snow White is supposed to be like a teenager, like early teens, like 14. Okay. So she's a girl. She's not fully mature, you know, so no wonder she runs. No wonder she's scared. No wonder she hides. And you know what? For me, like, if I were her, it's like, what a blessing it was that the seven dwarfs came into her life and were able to help her. And it was such a better situation than where she was. Like, yes, she was a homemaker, but what is wrong with that? To me, there is nothing wrong with, you know, especially in the time period of that film, you know, being a homemaker and providing for those who are providing for her. So, you know,
I think what these, these groups are trying to teach about that is that they don't want a world where Hollywood is supposedly teaching little girls that when they see an empty house and they don't, that their first thought should be, oh, we need to clean this up, you know, because I'm a good girl and I keep things tidy, you know?
Yeah.
Which is ludicrous when we look back and think about what the actual logic behind their argument is. And, so anyway, go on.
So, I love Cinderella, and last year we did a profile or a series of posts called The Princess Profiles, and I jumped up to do Cinderella because I felt like Cinderella was kind of underrepresented. You know, people say, oh, she's a weak character. She just kind of sits around. Other people do stuff for her, but that's not true. So I'm going to include a link to my Princess Profiles on Cinderella. It's titled Princess Profiles. If more women and men acted like Cinderella, the world would be a better place. And I include a quote in this article, which is the first song in the film, which we'll talk about when we do our discussion. But I just wanted to read you these quotes. The lyrics. It says, Cinderella, you're as lovely as your name. Cinderella, you're a sunset in a frame. Though you're dressed in rags, you wear a queenly grace. Anyone can see a throne would be your proper place. And that really, to me, embodies Cinderella, because she's in this horrible situation, yet she's still, she is queenly. I mean, she has this grace about her that people cannot take away from her, which is, to me, why I love Cinderella. I think she's just such a great role model, because even through these horrible times, some people are going to complain and they're going to pout and they're going to say, my life sucks. But, you know, she's still kind. Like, if you watch her through the movie, she's always very kind to the stepmother and stepsisters. She doesn't, you know, bad mouth them or talk bad about them or like give them lip. She's super kind to them. She's always, you know, grateful. You know, she says thank you to the fairy godmother. Thank you to the mice when they create her dress. Like, she's always grateful for all the little blessings in her life. And then, you know, throughout, like I said, she's always graceful. But to me, like, Cinderella is a huge example. Like, if they were to make Cinderella nowadays, which they are, but like, I have a feeling that they would make Cinderella like talk back to her stepmother and stepsister, like, you know, just try to be, because it's like that thing of being independent and like stand up for yourself, but not necessarily.
I mean, you watch Disney Channel and that's all that is.
Yeah. But that's not necessarily a good role model either. Like,
no,
being able to stand there and have someone be horrible and mean and rude and just disgusting to you, and you still treat them with kindness and you can move on and still be happy. Like, that is the role model to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that I actually find a little bit annoying about, like, every once in a while, like, if ever I'm ever watching Disney Channel, which isn't really that often because I don't have a TV, but yeah, like, that's something that I've noticed is, like, they just, most of the kids talking to parents, it's very rude, it's abrupt, it's like I don't respect you, oh, like, the parents are dumb type thing, and it's just, I don't really like that. But that's definitely not the case with, you know, movies like this. So honestly, I don't see them as weak. I actually really appreciate all of these good qualities as well.
Do we have any like last thoughts? I mean, I don't know if necessarily we answered the question. Well, we did answer the question. Do you think they're weak characters? Yeah, we definitely tackled this issue and stated our opinions. I mean, I'm not being very, very Cinderella-y here, but
we hate you.
No, I'm being kind to you guys. I'm being opinionated, but she's opinionated too. Anyways. Yeah, I could learn a lot from Cinderella. Like, really, I should probably just like frame a Princess Cinderella and look at it every day to remind me of like how to act like her. And that's actually a really good idea. I need to find a good Princess Cinderella now. If you have any thoughts, listeners, of good artists that have a Cinderella print, tweet me. I'm interested. Like, 100% seriously, I am.
Well, there. If you go on eBay, they do have Cinderella cells.
Well, that's expensive.
Yeah, you need to shell out about $1,100 for a hand-painted cell of the scene where her rags turn into the dress.
That would don't even talk about that, because that's like a dream come true. If anyone wants to donate that to me, that's really cool too, but I'm looking for suggestions at this point in time.
All right. I'll send a message to the seller. Be like, hey, can we have that for free? We're the Rotoscoper.
We'll talk about you. Yay.
We'll talk about you. A free mention. You won't even have to pay us. All right. My bottom line is, let's keep, we don't have to reimagine these heroines, and that's what they are. They are the protagonists and the heroes of these films. There's nothing wrong with the way that they overcame their obstacles and for the help that they received. That's life. You help yourself, and sometimes people help you. And so I think we should leave it at that. And by golly, one of these days we need to have a nerdy couch discussion on these heavy CG, gritty live action remakes that that Disney is trying to pull off. And then I'll get on my soapbox and I will rant.
Yes.
You will not have seen anything like it, not since the Princess Mononoke episode.
Whoa. Nice.
And that is saying
All right.
something.
Get ready, guys. Stay tuned.
I wonder what it would take to get me on a soapbox.
Oh, we'd have to talk about either Brazil or singing or hard work versus false expectations. Am I right?
Which no one knows what we're talking about because we cut that out of the Ratatouille episode. Yes.
Thank you for listening to what I do, Mason.
Hey, we listened to you, Chelsea. Hooray! We're starting 2015 with a great start.
All right. Oh, resolution is done. We're good for the whole year.
Oh, man.
Take one wicked stepmother, two jealous stepsisters, one snobby house cat, one fairy godmother, and a bunch of mischievous mice. Then put them together, and what have you got?
Take a look at that!
It's Walt Disney's classic, Cinderella.
It's such a surprise!
It's the love story to end all love stories.
A wonderful dream come true.
But that's just the beginning of the fun. The music.
Cinderella, Cinderella, night and day, it's Cinderella. Take the fire, fix the breakfast, wash the dishes, do the
the magic.
Look at what she did.
And the excitement.
On the stroke of 12, the spell will be broken.
Wait, please wait.
Walt Disney Pictures proudly presents a motion picture whose time has come again. And it's coming for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Because even miracles take a little time.
Exclusively in theaters. Walt Disney's classic, Cinderella.
All right, so we are doing Cinderella, in case you haven't picked up yet. Yes, we are doing Cinderella by Walt Disney Animation, which it wasn't Walt Disney. It was Walt Disney Productions at the time. It was released February 15th, 1950. It's 75 minutes long. It had a budget of $2.9 million and made about $85 million. Now, if you adjust that, it would have cost around $28 million adjusted for inflation and about $840 million adjusted for inflation. So, yeah, $85 million back in 1950, like for box office total. That is amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's because this movie is good.
Well, I mean, Frozen did $1 billion, so this was just $200,000 away.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, it's hard to compare because, like, that's just adjusted for inflation. Like, I'm sure if you compare the number of people who actually saw Frozen versus the number of people who saw Cinderella, it'd be, like, proportionally out. You know what I mean? So it's hard to compare, like, for me to compare. But still, I mean, hey, not too shabby.
No.
Yeah, definitely not. And this is a fine example of the work of the Nine Old Men, the legendary animators from Disney.
Yes.
And this is where Mark Davis comes in to do, along with Eric Larson, but Mark Davis doing the directing animation for Cinderella, the actual girl, you know. And then the incredible talents of Milt Kahl, you know, Frank Thomas, Ollie Johnson, Ward Kimball, all of them down to Fred Moore. And kind of a grand slam of like all-star Disney animators.
This was a good time to be an animator at Walt Disney because they were good.
Can we talk about like general feelings from the film?
Sure.
Okay, animation wise, I felt like the animation was really good for human characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know how they used a ton of rotoscoping for Snow White's character? And
yes.
Like the what's her name? The Blue Angel. What's the lady?
Blue Fairy Godmother.
Oh, Blue Fairy, the Blue Angel. She flies away in an F-16. Hey, there's an idea for your gritty remake of Pinocchio. Anyway, they did use a lot of human live action human reference for animating the characters, but I don't. It doesn't feel like it was rotoscoped. Like it doesn't go into like the Bakshi level of human reference. And you look on the trivia pages for this film, and they're like, actually, they used a lot of live action human reference. Well, everyone does that now. So this was kind of the dawn of an era of using that technique. And there's a lot of human action. You know what I mean? There's a lot of human drama and dialogue. There's not a whole lot of actual physical action until you get into the subplots with the mice. And, you know, it's just a lot of it's intrigue and drama. And so to animate the dialogue and to animate the drama and the feelings, that takes a lot of talent. And so I think that's where this movie really shines animation wise.
Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting about the intro is I have watched this movie so many times that I have everything memorized down to like the intonation of the voices.
Ooh.
But I couldn't, you know, when Morgan was quoting the song in the Nerdy Couch discussion, what I was listening to, I was like, I could not sing you this song for my life. Like, I've kind of sad about that, but I always wondered, like, why is that?
What? What?
Yeah.
What? Chelsea.
Yeah.
Shame. Shame. Okay. Okay. This makes me very sad. Well, first off, let me sing you the song. Cinderella, you're as lovely as your name. Cinderella. Like, it's a Disney choir that's singing.
Right.
Disney chorus.
Right.
But
no, I know.
Are you kidding me? This doesn't ring any bells.
No.
Do 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 do.
Way off, all right.
Rotoscopers theme song. Anybody?
Oh man. Oh yeah. It's all coming together.
That's why no one like actually picks up on that, because like what Chelsea said, this is kind of one of the more like forgotten Disney songs.
It really is. And I always like wondered, why is that? And I think it might have been the case just because it, like, I remember watching this on VHS.
You probably skipped over the credits.
I always skipped over the credits. I did. Just go straight to the castle part because it was like, it's just the credits. I mean, except for like 101 Dalmatians. 101 Dalmatians was a fun one because it had all these like moving parts. But this one was just like screen. So that's probably why. An interesting thing. Kind of sad because they're really pretty screens, but still.
I loved these opening credits. Like, I loved all the opening credits. I mean, I'm the girl who, when I was like 5, watched Fantasia all the time. You know what I mean? So, like, I liked these moments where it wasn't just characters, where I could just sit and watch. And I just thought it was interesting. I love this song. To me, it's very romantic in a way. And just from the very first notes of when I was watching this on the Blu-ray, it was just like all these good feelings and memories about this movie, like just such positive emotions I have towards this movie. And every moment is iconic, really.
How did the Blu-ray look?
Oh, I was going to save that rant for later, but since you brought it up, oh, the Blu-ray is by far one of the two worst restorations they have ever done.
Oh my gosh.
And that's not just my opinion. This is heavily documented. I'll include a link in the show notes, which is a comparison.
Please do.
It's so bad, and it's just pathetic and embarrassing. And basically what they do is they use like a computer, you know, obviously, to reimage this, and they kind of just made like the highlights too bright, and it just looks like they, and as a result, lots of lines are missing. Like if Cinderella is like walking, here, I'll include a link so you can see it. If Cinderella is, you know, she has glove on and she has her dress and she puts her hand in front of her dress, you can't see it anymore because it just blends in. Like they completely like tried to smooth over everything so much that it loses any dimension and character that the original film had. Like colors are distorted like crazy. They make her dress blue. You know, they like oversaturate. It's basically like a bad case of oversaturation. Her dress is oversaturated where it's too blue. It's supposed to be white. Like when she's walking, her dress has all these sparkles and things, and like all the half the sparkles are missing. I'm going to include this link. You guys got to see, because they do a comparison of a VHS and this, and the VHS is notably better.
Wait, I don't see any pictures.
You have to click on the show spoiler button.
Where?
On the first post. Yeah, there's a button that says warning, this is a big picture 2MB. It says show spoiler. You okay. Click on it, and then...
Oh, right. Okay.
That's what they do
okay,
in forums.
Yeah, I'm so looking that now.
They do that in forums, so if people like post a spoiler, you don't have to like read over the spoiler.
Yeah.
That's literally loss of data.
Yes, it is. And it's just an atrocity and just so embarrassing to the 9 old men who every line they put was distinctive and there was a purpose. But the fact that it's basically been it's like they had a giant eraser and they erased any like lines. So they made and they smoothed everything over. Colors are weird. It's just like the worst one for me. One of the worst ones is she's running through the drapes when she's running away and she looks back and the Grand Duke is sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, her dress has all these wrinkles and folds and just dimension in the original one. And right next to it, it looks like one giant blob of color. It is so bad. And the only one that possibly is worse than this is Sword in the Stone. But it's so sad to watch. Like, you really don't notice it until you... I mean, you do, but it's really bad once she gets in the dress because they really try. I don't know why, but they try to overly fix it. And you notice like in these when you're doing the comparison, it's clearly white and silver, her dress, but they make every attempt to oversaturate and make it blue. And as a result, the background colors just get morphed. And sorry, this is another
that's a clear like violation of all the hard work that went into making the original film.
I agree. And I know there's been a lot of upset fans about this, and I'm sure Disney knows. Whether Disney does anything, I don't know. But I really hope for like a future release. They just spend a lot of time and they fix this. They go back to the original reels and just do a real, get it, job, real good job fixing it. But I honestly, knowing the company, I doubt it. Like, but which
nah,
is
man,
so,
they're too busy. They're so too busy
pathetic.
Doing
the remake.
Well, they're too busy ruining the franchise with a gritty CG heavy remake, and they're also too busy doing the new Star Wars films, which will ruin another franchise. Case closed.
Yeah, see, this is so sad because Disney has one of the best archives like in the world. Like they've done even since the 30s, 40s, 50s, they've done a great job about holding on to things and preserving them. And I'm like, really? Why couldn't we preserve this? Like, why did we have to just destroy this? Anyways, I think I could go on and on and on about this, but I think
that's a deserved rant. No, that's a deserved rant, and it definitely needs to be brought up.
It's really sad. It actually is. It's
sorry
really
I asked.
Embarrassing. Anyways,
so a maybe happy family, almost at once in the movie, broken up because of the. Well, she's left a widow, Lady Tremaine.
Yes. And I love this storybook opening. It's just so iconic to me. But I love that scene where you see Cinderella when she's young and she's feeding the horse. The horse is drinking water and her dad's there. And you just look at those four characters, and three of them we see later in the film, years later. And just such a stark contrast between how happy and youthful and just healthy everybody looks in that like freeze frame basically compared to later when they're grown up, and Bruno is this just depressing, sad dog. The horse is just, you know, pathetic. And Cinderella, she still has grace. She doesn't look like have bags under her eyes, although she probably did. But it's just such a contrast between like how happy and idyllic the situation was, and then stepmother came in who's in the shadows, and then dad's gone, and suddenly everything's kind of darkness.
Interesting.
I'll stop talking now.
No, it's fine. It's I like you automatically get a foreshadowing one because of the musical cues. But when they look up at the window and looking down on them is Tremaine and Anastasia and the other girl. What's her name?
Drizella.
Yeah, Drizella. Sorry that I don't know them.
Come on, man.
That's cool.
And it just looks kind of foreboding, you know?
Yeah, they do a good job at you know, keeping them in the dark, too. Like the colors and everything, it just makes it, you can definitely see that this ain't no good.
It kind of sets up this big, you know, big picture story, what with the kingdom and the castle and stuff. And then I guess she's like a governess or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm.
She had to be like that was I mean, he's a high roller and her dad was very wealthy considering one, he's a little bit far off of the castle, you know. And that's a big house, one. Which also, I mean, that castle is huge.
Oh my gosh, that's the most epic Disney castle ever.
It is, and they're
it's
just
gigantic.
Like, it's such a tiny kingdom.
It's just one dude who lives in there.
I know. But even looking at her house, I mean, that house is ginormous. So he's got to be like a second cousin or something to the king. So obviously that's why Cinderella was going to go for the prince anyway, because, you know, they always intermarried at that time anyway. But it was just like, dang, high rolling. But it, I mean, one good thing about her coming from the quote unquote rags to riches is the fact that she was always rich. Like, my mom has kind of this thing. She's just like, yeah, you may not have money, but you're not poor. Like, don't ever consider yourself poor. Poor is a state of mind. You know, poor is where you're not grateful for the things that you have. And that's one thing that Cinderella was. She was kind of pushed up into the corner and into the top tower and whatever, given all the broken stuff. But still, like, she had that poise and she had that self-confidence about her, and she was grateful. And that's really what I believe that confidence comes from.
Well, it makes me think of Hunchback of Notre Dame, the central message with that film, who is the man and who is the monster.
Right.
And the whole film revolves around Lady Tremaine and her two daughters treating Cinderella that like she's less of a lady, that she's not, she doesn't fit the image of a beautiful woman. when it, at the end of the film, at the beginning of the film, obviously, you realize who is the real beautiful woman and who are the monsters and who are the I wouldn't say poor in spirit, because that's the wrong way to say it, but who are the who are the truly depraved ones.
Yeah.
And so I strike that similarity.
Who
there
are the ones that truly lack?
Yeah. See, that's a good way to put it, I suppose. And then we flash forward several years. How old is Cinderella when she?
I have 16-ish.
16.
Yeah, about the standard 16. Age for they're Disney all princesses.
They're all around there. Shout out to the voice actors of that day. I loved listening to her tone and her articulation. And even Lady Tremaine. I mean, man.
Oh, she's great. She's got a great voice.
I love those voices of that era. Because, I mean, they're just so great.
Classy.
Very classy. And they're very well trained and timeless. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
What's the classiest voice of all in the film?
Announcing Cinderella. His Imperial Majesty the Grand Duke.
Anyway. There's even a goofy yelp.
There is.
In this film. Anyway, so we flash forward several years, and she's about 16, standard age for a Disney princess to be. And here's a juicy piece of trivia. If you really look at it, if you really pay attention, the entire story of the film takes place in a 24-hour period.
Mm-hmm.
She gets up, she does her chores, the ball's that night, stroke of midnight, and then the next morning everyone's tired, and the big payoff at the end happens, and
She had a great day.
It's been a good day.
She had a lot of bad
crazy
years.
Weekend.
But
Cinderella, what'd you do this weekend? You really would not believe me if I told you.
And enter the continuing the tradition of our heroines who are able to speak to animals.
Right. Hey, but the animals don't speak back, but they communicate with her.
They do communicate.
She gives them orders.
Well, the mice speak back.
She has her own little army. It's crazy.
If she was really sinister, she would cause the rats to give Lady Tremaine the plague or something, or rabies, or let's not talk about that. Hey,
sound like Cinderella.
Ideas for this year's film. But she can speak to animals, and they even sing along with her.
I always loved, it starts with a dream is a wish your heart makes, and they kind of had this extended version, which isn't really extended, it's just the way it is in the movie, and I love that part where she's singing and the water gets poured over the shower. She's like, not like that, but we're introduced to, there's a new mouse, we got to go get him. And she's like, he'll need a dress and a jacket or whatever. And then they're like, no, it's a trap. And I love that she suddenly freaks out about Gus being in a trap, because personally, this isn't a trap that's going to hurt or kill him. It's just a cage.
Yeah.
And two, I highly doubt the stepmothers and stepsisters are going to clean out the trap. So it's like, oh, no, we got to make it before they do, because this is probably Cinderella's job to clean out the trap. So, why the rush? I mean, I get it. She's really nice. She doesn't want him to stay in the trap longer than he needs to. But me, I'm like, it's not like those typical mouse traps with the spring, where he's squished. It's just a cage.
Yeah. Poor Gus Gus. When I was a kid, I was more interested in what the mice were doing than anything else.
Oh, no, not me.
Well, that's because you're a girl.
Well, maybe. But as I was watching it this time, I was really bored during the mice scenes. And just where I kind of even zoned out as I was watching it, because I was like, whatever, mice, this has nothing to do with the story. And so speaking of Gus, she calls him, we'll call you Octavius. But for short, we'll call you Gus. Do you guys know why she does that? For me, as a history buff, I love this part, because I was one of those Simpsons jokes where it's a joke on one level, but on another level, it's a higher plane. Only certain people can understand it. Do you know why the nickname for Octavius is Gus?
Pray tell.
You know, I really wish I was on your level, Morgan, but I don't.
Yes. Come on, get on my level, guys. No, so Octavius was the name of Caesar in ancient Rome. But then when he became the emperor, they changed his name to Augustus Caesar, which obviously short for Augustus is Gus. So nice. That is how you go from...
Well, I knew all that stuff. I guess I just didn't put all the pieces together.
Now you know.
The game is
have that conversation at a dinner party. You'll be a cool one.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, Gus is great. And who's the wise guy, Mouse? Who's kind of the leader?
Jacques
is great. And he has a great way of speaking. Well, Jacques is great. He's the guy who wears
not
the...
Not like that. Nope.
Oh, check out Amy Surprise.
Oh, surprise.
I know. I wish I could do a decent job of imitating their voices, but
yeah.
Sadly, I can't, for I am not a mouse. But I really don't know. I liked Jacques a lot when I was a kid, but I really like all the scenes where they're sneaking past
Lucifer,
the cat. For one, Lucifer is a great name for a cat.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a cat person. Like, I love cats, but I also recognize that cats are jerks and they're evil.
Some of them. Not all of them.
But sometimes, like with most Christopher Nolan movies, you like the bad guy more than the good guy. And I think that Lucifer is a great name for a cat, but I wouldn't name my cat Lucifer, or at least call him that in public, because I don't know how people would react.
No, I had a cat, and... Well, I had two cats growing up that were like the big ones that stand out in my head. My one, whose name was Patch, and she was like the mother. Patch. And she was just because she was a calico and she had one patch over her eye. She was my best friend. Loved her. And then there a couple years later, we didn't have cats for a while. And then we decided to get this cat. And it was given to us by our brother, and he got it from someone. Anyway, we ended up with this cat who was like pure white, beautiful little kitten. And he started to grow up, and... Then we realized this cat was just mean, and like he would turn, you would be walking by and he would like be hiding behind something and wait for his chance to come up and pounce you, which means he would like jump and like scratch your legs and then run away. And so I named this cat Gato Diablo because that's what he was.
Wow.
And then I ended up with a spray bottle that I would spray every time he came after me.
Oh, you gave him the old spray bottle.
I did.
We just used a super soaker after a while. And then after a while, we just had a bucket of cold water and we just toss him in there whenever he got up on the... He died. So, pneumonia.
Speaking of the name...
I'm just
Lucifer.
Kidding.
So speaking of the name Lucifer, do you guys remember Clean Flicks?
Dude, oh, yeah. I love Clean Flicks. I'm a huge... proponent of Clean Flicks. We need to bring Clean Flicks back.
I never actually used Clean Flicks, but I liked the idea of Clean Flicks. So basically, explain Clean Flicks really quick.
Okay, Clean Flicks was a Utah company. This is the one good idea besides computer animation that came from Utah. And Clean Flicks is basically if you were ever a high schooler in the 90s and you watched the movies Gladiator, The Patriot, or Braveheart, they were most likely edited by Clean Flicks. It was a short story. It was a legal service that you bought. You bought a copy of the DVD or a VHS. You sent it to Clean Flicks, and if it was rated R, they would edit it to where it was PG-13. And so, you know, it's... In some walks of life, that's valuable. We'll just put it at that.
Yeah, you can see rated R movies that you normally wouldn't be able to see otherwise because of content. It's great.
Right. Eventually, Hollywood stepped in and said that and shut Clean Flicks down because they thought it was an infringement on their product, that they were altering the product itself, which they weren't. And Clean Flicks wasn't, with few exceptions, it wasn't profiting off of the video sales. It was profiting off of the service for copies of videos that were already owned by the consumer. And that's another nerdy couch discussion. But Clean Flicks was basically a service where they edited videos for you, and it was great. Please bring it back.
And then they had another company that they made where it was just like a USB that you would put into your DVD player, and it wouldn't even change it. It would just skip over things. But still.
Okay, Morgan,
we're not talking about that company.
Yeah, Morgan, what does that have to do with Cinderella, though?
So back to Clean Flicks. Speaking of clean flicks, I remember hearing a story in like a newspaper of someone who took Cinderella to clean flicks. And I'm sure you're like, what the heck would someone want to edit out of Cinderella? And they wanted all instances of referring to the cat as Lucifer to be changed.
Boy,
come on,
Pepper
people.
10 almost came out of my nose. That's great. That's a classic Hear No Evil.
Yes.
That is a
so
classic.
So whenever
Hear
I
no
see
evil.
Lucifer, I always think of that story and I chuckle. like what conversation happened with that person? Like, I am so offended by the cats being named Lucifer. We cannot have our kids watch this.
Our children will never hear that name. He who must not be named.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Fear of the name only generates fear for the thing itself. But yeah. Okay, so Rusifi is a great cat. I love him.
He's
got such an attitude.
He does.
He hates everyone.
He is the first version of Grumpy Cat.
Oh, he's not Grumpy Cat. He's just Evil Cat because he takes pleasure in the suffering around him.
It's true.
He loves to make Cinderella suffer. He loves to be pampered by Lady Tremaine until he has to get a bath. Men do the sewing, clean the chimney, and do the laundry. Oh, yes. And one more thing. See that Lucifer gets a bath. He gives her this evil glare. Like, boy, lady, one of these days.
Thinking about that moment, like, I have that moment in my brain so much, also because of the music that goes along with it. And one of the things that as I was doing a soundtrack review for the Little Mermaid Legacy Collection, which is totally a buy it, just FYI. It's so good. But in the front, it talks about Alan Menken. He goes through and he talks about Mickey Mousing, which is basically he wanted to hear the underscore of the action in a way that, you know, you can picture what's going on. It's interesting. Like, there's a lot of those in here that I always remember, probably even more so than some of the lines of the film, but they do a really good job at like kind of buffeting those and making them a lot more memorable. I really liked it. Did you guys have any favorite songs or anything throughout this movie?
All.
I really like the mice song where Jacques is complaining about how Cinderella is being treated. Make the fire, make the breakfast, wash the dishes, do the laundry.
They always keep her knocking.
She go around in circles, make her very, very dizzy. Still be holler.
Make her busy.
Keep her busy, Cinderella.
Also, and I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but I love the mending the dress song where
hey,
he's like,
we can do it.
Yeah, he's like, I'll do the thithers, and I can do the sewing. Leave the sewing to the women. You go get some trimming. And I'm like, you know what? That has nothing to do with gender roles. That just has everything to do with women knowing what to do and sending the guy off to do some menial chores so that they don't screw everything up. As a married man, I know exactly how this works. And I'm proud to take part.
That is the complete opposite of when my husband, I wanted to do a Subway Tile backsplash in our kitchen. And he's gone this weekend. And so I told him, hey, like, and he said, like, I'm not helping with that. Like, if you really want that to happen, you have to do it yourself. And it's been a few months. And so finally this weekend, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. So he texted me. He's like, hey, what are your plans this weekend? You know, just talking. And then I told him, like, I am literally going to do the backsplash. Like, I'm going to do this, this, and this. I talked to my boss about it. My boss is like a huge, like, home improvement. My boss knows everything. So if I have a question, I just ask my boss. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to Home Depot right now. And Jared was like, just wait till I get back and I can help you. I'm like, but you didn't even. You just said this was my project. You are never helping me. And it's just talking about, like, leave the sewing to the women, leave the home improvement to the men. Like,
yeah, well,
yeah, it's the same
that.
Thing.
Yeah.
I'm totally capable, but it's just, yeah. So, hey, now I have a helper. I'm very happy.
This is married to someone in construction.
Yes, exactly. Hey, he said he wasn't going to help. I was like, okay, fine. I'll do it myself. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail.
That's all right.
That's funny.
So right after this, we go straight into our first encounter with the king, who I love. He is amazing.
I love the king.
Most professional, mature king ever. Level-headed.
I'm
even-tempered.
So sad. I'm so sad we have mice scenes. Well, we could have just got more king scenes.
Oh, give it a rest.
Oh, okay, fine.
I just love how the sense... Okay, one, there's a huge sense of scale with the artwork in this film.
Oh, yes.
The castle, definitely, but also the manor or the estate that Cinderella cares for. It really sells the, like, isolation surrounding her. But anyway, the castle is huge on the outside. And on the inside, when he does his... see your family growing farther and farther. Every time he says it, there's a painting and then another painting and then a gigantic 5-story painting of his son. And I've just got this little palace. I want to see little feet again. I love that scene where it's just like these over the top giant paintings of the son. How does the son feel about this?
Oh man, that's really funny. Like, there's those parents out there that, like, they are the stage parents is the only thing that I can, like, come up with. And if you are ever in, like, entertainment, there are some parents out there.
You worked the pageant
there.
Circuit.
I did, actually, just so you know.
Yes, she did.
You were a pageant kid?
Man, I was.
So many questions I have to ask you.
I did pageants, and the pageant that I did mostly was actually called Cinderella, which was a reason why I love this movie so much, was because it was like, it's what I do. But part of that was my parents were never like this. Please do not get the idea that this is where they are, because that's not how they were. But... that being said, every once in a while you'd go to like internationals where they had, you know, people from all over and the South, and you get these parents in there that are just like crazy about their kids and
pageant moms,
which I'm totally okay with. Like, I'm totally and great with the fact that you are so proud of your children and you want them to succeed. Yes.
All right. So what's the relationship with Cinderella?
The relationship is the fact that he's looking at his son like he is everything that he's going to be and everything that his kingdom stands for. He's kind of putting on his son. And so he's the one, even though his son may or may not be into it, his dad is like, gung-ho, you are gonna do this, boy, because it's your turn and you're gonna make me proud, you know? I just think it's fun.
Yeah, it's the classic Disney... you know, we talk about false expectations for females in these Disney films. What about false expectations on these princes?
It's true. If you're trying to live up to that painting, geez.
Yeah, no kidding. What does kind of it doesn't disappoint me about this film, but it's funny to see that there isn't really any, there are very few scenes where you really go into the son's conflict.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay, because it's not much of a conflict once he sees Cinderella. He's like, well, gonna get married.
I'm good. Yeah. And that is one thing that I wish that we would have had more of, because the king kind of talks about it. It was like, I don't like his ideas and he doesn't like it. And I don't, you know, you could tell that there's a difference between the two of them, a difference of opinion on different things. But obviously it really did not matter at that first sight.
Yeah, totally. And then the Grand Duke is this, you know, the classic, like, he's like the poor little sycophant who is trying the hardest to do his job, but he's dealing with very difficult people and he doesn't have the confidence to just tell them to get a hold of yourself. You know, just trying to please the king, doing whatever he wants, and probably being constantly threatened, you know.
Or else.
Force my son to get married by midnight or else.
Now we have invitation on, you know, to this grand ball that they're putting together tonight.
One day only, folks.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Like, talk about a P on your Myers-Briggs scale, which is like no planning, no structure, just like fly by the seat of your pants.
Hey,
like,
don't diss us P's.
As a very strong J, I will diss on the P's. But
you should hang out with Shanna.
She sounds amazing.
She's an INTJ. I'm the exact opposite.
I'm an INTJ. No, opposites are great. But I mean, like, really, they've known probably for weeks or months the day that the prince was going to come home. Like, and just today, the king started thinking about the prince's future and wife and women. I'm pretty sure this is on his mind all the time. I'm pretty sure probably 6 months ago, he probably was interested in planning this ball so all the lucky ladies could appear. But it's just, I mean, just for time's sake and story and hilarity, they don't. They make it like, hey, let's do the ball tonight. Because it's funny to see how flabbergasted the Duke gets, like, what? yeah, but it's
party
it's
planning committee.
Here we go again.
Opposites do very well. I didn't mean to. But anyway, yeah, so he has to, the poor Duke, they should make if they're going to make a gritty reboot, they should make a story about how the Duke single-handedly threw this extravagant ball, got everyone in the kingdom to arrive, and he had 24 hours to do so before email, folks.
Yeah. And, I mean, those invitations, I'm sure, are not easy to come up with. Each one hand-inked and everything.
Yeah.
Every eligible maiden is to attend.
Or it'll be your head. Well, what do I have to... It'll be your head.
And then the music lesson.
Oh my gosh, this is a great sing.
Iconic.
Sing, nightingale.
You clumsy. You did it on purpose.
She just slaps her on the head with a metal instrument.
They are the comic relief. Like, we didn't. Why did we need the mice? We had them.
Nah, dude, see the mice.
I think all of them were the comic relief because she's so constant that you just have to see everybody else falling apart.
Right. Cinderella has no real flaws. There's no there's no like vice that she has to overcome, and there's no giant lesson that she needs to learn at the end. I call it the Aladdin factor. Mm. The only thing she has to overcome is time.
This is a time turner, Harry.
But anyway, why all the Harry Potter references? Anyway.
It's a good time.
It is a good time.
Girls are mean.
But yeah, these girls are mean.
These girls are mean.
Because Cinderella comes in and she realizes that they're having a ball. She's like, well, I'm family. Actually, I'm the only family that rightfully should own this estate. Like, this is my house.
Right.
You just live in it and tell me what to do and make me clean it every day. And shouldn't I come? And so Lady Tremaine, being the wily witch that she is, if you do all your, do all your chores, and of course you have to help out your sisters and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, Mother, do you realize what you just said?
Of course.
Of course.
I said if.
Oh, if you know, so they do that thing that girls do.
That girls do. All us girls do that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry. Anyway, this is gonna be like our weird like sexism episode or something. But yeah, yes. Lady Tremaine is just awful. I think she's jealous. I think she's along the same veins as the evil queen from Snow White, who's just jealous of the protagonist's beauty. Because I think she sees it. She's smart and wily enough to realize that Cinderella does kind of have a claim on the property, and she could be royalty because of her lineage and because she carries herself like a princess.
I think that's actually what it is, because she is a Lady Tremaine. I would call a ladder climber.
And a ladder climber.
Yes. And a squanderer.
And a squanderer, yes. Like, she's just trying to put her daughters higher than what they are, and it's what I think. And because of that, she knows where Cinderella is, and rightfully is, and so she wants to do everything in her power to, you know, push you down and bring the other people up. The classic bully, thinking that they can raise themselves by putting other people down. You can't do it, people.
Well, guess what, Lady Tremaine's of the world? You thought wrong.
I will say, though, that like Cinderella really dodged a bullet by not having to wear that pink bow.
Oh, come on. That dress is cute.
I did not like that dress.
Hey, when you don't have
okay,
much,
it's nothing compared to
amazing.
What the right, it's nothing compared to what the godmother, you know, the witch lady fairy gave her. I can't even remember the dress. I'm a guy, so I won't comment on the dress.
Well, I guess going along with Chelsea's point, you know your dress is bad when even the mice say, old.
They're like, holy crap.
Old.
Old fashioned. Like, oh.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's old.
It's so... This is the 13th century nowadays.
But those mice are pretty handy. Like,
oh, my gosh, they're geniuses.
No wonder she doesn't kill them. They're amazing.
Yeah.
These mice may be of use to me. I mean, this is kind of a French, idyllic, like, French setting, you know? So maybe she is. Maybe Claude Frollo eventually comes down from her line. There's a Disney conspiracy theory. So they get to work while she does her chores. And, before all this, can we talk about a song that I really do like that I used to not like as a kid? The scene where she's doing the scrubbing and it's all the bubbles.
Ooh,
that's cool animation.
Yeah,
because they had to do all that. They had to do all the reflections and all the it's kind of a trippy sequence that is kind of underrated as far as animation quality, kind of like the big elephant sequence in Dumbo, arguably one of the best animated sequences of all time when you're on mushrooms. and then I love the bam at the end where Lucifer just ruins it like a little chump. But the mice really do a good job. Very handy. You know, you make fun of the mice scenes, but they really do save the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel there's other ways they could make this work, but I would have loved to have seen this movie without mice.
Maybe they'll have a exterminator edition.
And the only reason I say that is because
Cinderella rat poison edition. No rats in the movie.
No, the only reason why I say that is because the non-mice scenes are actually so good that it's like, man, I wish we could have just had more of those and imagined how really good the film could be. That being said, I do like Lucifer scenes. I like Lucifer, let's put it that way. So I guess they needed to give him some, like, a foil.
I'm sending,
you know,
it'd be
awkward if he's just like scratching at Cinderella's heels all the time and being naughty.
I'm sending a tweet out. Morgan likes Lucifer.
Great. I'll retweet that.
But anyway. Yeah. And so they save the day. And you can't help but feel for Cinderella. She comes down. She's like, got my dress. What's up? We going to party? And Lady Tremaine's like, crap. Here, girls, beat her up. You know, let's go.
Basically, right?
Yeah, but it's a sad, sad scene, the way they kind of tear her dress up and kind of leave her there.
Well, and this scene is really cool because with each frame where they're ripping off her dress, it gets progressively more red. So it starts off very neutral and then it gets a little pink and then a little redder and then really, really dark by the end of it. And it's just such a fast scene. They're less than a second long when they're ripping off the dress.
Wow.
But that background really helps create the mood of like, this is a terrifying time for her. Mm-hmm. It's just
very
like
Alfred Hitchcock. You
indeed.
Know?
It's those things you don't notice, but you notice, right?
Well, you're good at noticing.
No, I had bonus features, so they noticed. I copy. I parrot. So, yeah. So then they, you know, prance away with their bums, which I love those bum dresses. I think they're amazing. I had a like that. It had like a big bouffant on the butt and it was so cool. My mom gave it away and I got it for $1 and I love it.
I wonder why it was for $1.
Well, it was at Urban Outfitters on sale for $1. It was the most amazing sale ever. Anyways.
What was Urban Outfitters doing selling that?
Who knows?
What year was this?
I'm gonna make a line of skirts that just are known for their bouffants. So yeah, then they, you know, trot away, and Cinderella, like, really at this point she's hit her breaking point. Most situations she's been able to overcome, she's been very positive and very happy, but she runs away. And I just love the scene where it's dark and then you see lights turn on and she's running and it's just a shadow, like, just such a great scene. That's why I just love the cinematography in this film. And then she flops down, the classic princess flop or whatever it's called, on the. And then in the background, that initial song from the opening credits, Cinderella. No, not that. The song "A Dream Is a Wish Your Heart Makes." It's like a slower version of that kind of singing. And if you pay attention, like, she's kind of like talking to herself, but she's kind of reacting to the lyrics in the song. So they'll say like, you know, keep your head up or whatever. And then she's like, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. No, there's no point. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, she meets her iconic lowest point.
Mm-hmm.
She needs a little Disney magic to cheer her up. Like me? Funny, Jiminy Cricket? No, not like you. We need the big guns. But yeah. You better believe it. Fairy Godmother. I love her character. Mm-hmm. She's not as she's a lot more believable than the Blue Fairy. She's more like the fairies on Sleeping Beauty, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, she's voiced by one of them.
Right.
Oh, that's right. She is.
Verna Felsen. True.
She's very kind, but she's sort of forgetful, but she's also kind of, you know, she's not like this godlike, unfeeling being, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I love it when she's like, yes, dolly. Yes. Good gracious, child. You can't go in that.
Can't go in that.
I put
gosh.
Gosh. go like that.
We should have Goofy Bill. We should have
oh my gosh.
Redub. I mean, he didn't respond to our blast of tweets to have
Dang
him
redo. It.
But still, that would be hilarious if he just did famous Disney characters as Goofy's voice. Yes. Oh, so many good things that aren't going to happen. Maybe, Mason, you can just do it.
I'll do my best.
And not that you actually have to do this, but I'm just pondering. That would be a hilarious YouTube series, just like Mason dubs.
Oh, today. I would love
Mason
to do
is going
Mason.
To dub.
I would love to do Mason dubs in dramatic readings. I don't know if this made the episode, but one episode I was like, hey, if you have a fan fiction that you want me to dramatically read, then send it in. But I can't guarantee I'll be able to do all the voices, I guess. Oh. I can always try.
Good times.
Fairy Godmother. Well, hop in, my dear. We can't waste time. But, good heavens, child. You can't go on that. Okay, that's just all over the place.
Oh, good. I don't care. It's all over the place.
Something simple, but darling, too.
Oh, yup. Oh, gosh. Now, just a minute. You must understand, my dear, at the stroke of 12, the spell will be broken. Oh, yeah. And everything will be as it was before. That's very Western.
Who cares? That's amazing.
Like all dreams, well, I'm afraid this can't last forever. You'll have until midnight, and then... Yeah! I win. Anyway, that's the best I can do.
It's pretty great. Fans, if you want Mason to do a Mason Dubs series on YouTube, tweet him with the hashtag Mason Dubs and let him know your interest.
Sayalikadoola, manchigaboola, bippity boppity boo. Put them together and what do you got? Gippity boppity boo. And Max is like, Dad, why are you singing this? If Bill Farmer ever listens to the show, maybe he'll like cringe and like gnash his teeth so hard because of my horrible tribute to Goofy that he'll just do it. Gosh, I forgot where we were. Oh, cool. So I like this part where the pumpkin turns into the pimped out chariot thing. This is weird. The horse turns into a dude. So does Bruno.
One way to put it.
Bruno turns into a human. And stuff, and then the mice turn into horses.
Yep.
Why can't you just make the horse turn into like a super horse?
Well,
and
no,
then the mice can be
him.
Like her entourage.
Because we need four.
It's gotta be a fast character.
And I actually thought about this. I was like, okay, well, the horse knows how to be a horse, so who better to drive, right? Mm-hmm. Right?
I don't know. This might be when Willow's all
he
over
will
again.
Drive the way he wants. To be ridden,
yeah.
Not the way that humans do. So who knows how this is going to end up?
It's true.
So they get to the ball, and the ball is, I guess they didn't have to do much. It just looks like the same old. It's not like they have banners and, you know, streamers and stuff. It's just the ballroom. Great. And I love just like in the background, just the announcer guy announcing everyone's names.
Oh, yeah. All the different names. And that's where you really hear the word Tremaine.
Alouetta Dubois, daughter of the son Dubois.
Yeah.
I always remember Dubois.
This is how it goes. Mademoiselle Augustina Dubois, the daughter of General Pierre Dubois.
Oh.
And in the background, Mademoiselle Leonora Mercedes Elator, daughter of Colonel and Madame De La Tour. It's just like in the background. And then, the Mademoiselles Drizella and Anastasia Tremaine, daughters of Lady Tremaine. I'm not that great. We need a man to do it, but cool, it's cool.
Yeah. Oh, and before all that, you've got one of Cinderella's greatest quotes where she's like, and besides, it'll probably be dull and boring and...
completely wonderful.
Oh. And then Cinderella shows up, crashes the party, and the prince just gets up. Because he's been bored this whole time. He's like, golly, I can't remember all of these girls' names and numbers and
he's
and
probably
Twitter handles
met
and,
them before, is a thing.
I don't know, because in this instance, the king is so desperate, he's just inviting peasant girl. He doesn't care if they have a lick of royal blood. He's inviting everybody, because at this point, someone's got to stick. Right.
Yeah, maybe.
So, but a lot of them are daughters. They have fancy French names, so they must be important.
Everybody in France has a fancy French name.
But I love that part where like Mason was talking about, the Duke is like, all right, kink, for real. Like, if this is what you were expecting, it's not going to happen. And he looks up. What does he see? The girl of his dreams standing there. Who she is and where she came, he knows not.
Nor does he care.
And then the king is watching this unfold. And it's such a good scene. We need more of them. I mean, maybe we don't, because it's just the perfect amount of them. But that is a great scene, because look at this pompous windbag.
Oh, I love it when someone on a Disney movie calls someone else a windbag.
Oh,
it's like the Disney choice. Well, Cinderella looks great, and she, her, of course, her dress is totally different. And the scene where her dress transforms, you know, where it turns from the peasant torn up dress to the awesome Cinderella dress, that was reportedly Walt Disney's favorite animated scene ever.
Wow.
Was that moment. And it is truly a magical moment. All those sparkles, you know, that they had to animate. And then they dance, and we launch into my personal favorite song in Cinderella.
That's actually a good song. I never really appreciated it as a kid, you know, but
it's
a
classic
song. Yeah.
Can't you just hear like Bing Crosby singing it?
Yeah. Oh, I wish he would have.
I wanna know. And now I know.
This is what makes life.
He never sang it.
Dang it.
But yeah, that's a good one. And then, I don't know, this movie has a lot of like beautiful moments being interrupted by persons and things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, okay.
She interrupted herself. Well, no, the clock did.
The clock did. But like, this was one of those points where the artistic influences of Mary Blair stand out the most.
Oh, yeah.
When they're walking around over the bridge. And I remember looking in... I think it's the Art of Tangled, where they call like the symmetry of curves, where they kind of go into how they wanted to bring that out in Tangled as well. And I loved looking at that, and just how nothing is really straight or anything. It's just all very wavy and whimsical, and love it.
Yeah, she did a lot of concept art on this film. It's one of like the main three big ones that she did. And you can see it a lot. Like, even from the beginning scene, just the way that the castle is painted, or just how long and angular and cool it is. Like, that's very Mary Blair. But specifically once we get in the castle, or even more, once we hit This Is Love, all just pulled from her concept and inspiration, which is maybe why it's so whimsical. And like, this is kind of like the best part of the film. Yeah, there's lots of good parts, but visually. So, like you said, things get interrupted. Okay, on the first date.
I think the king's been wound up pretty tight. And this is where his madness just kind of makes him do a lot of rash decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it was the Duke in fear of his life. But they try everything in their power to detain Cinderella.
Yeah.
Send out the guards. Well, the gates. Open the gate, you fool!
If you're in Cinderella's shoes, like, what's the worst that can happen? Like, you transform in front of them and they see, like, a frock and he doesn't like you and you never see him again? I guess that's kind of embarrassing, but...
Maybe it was her... It was the fear of what her step family had been
she needed to be back
propagating all these years, that she wasn't good enough as herself.
She wouldn't have a ride home.
Oh, that's
well,
true.
She'd have a horse. She'd have a horse.
And you just feel bad because now she's got to carry all these mice back to her house.
I actually really loved the part where all the knights are going after her, the red and the black. That was cool. Yeah.
Very. That's also inspired by Mary Blair.
Yeah.
It was very strong imagery in the concept art for that, which she knew what she was doing.
Yeah,
guys.
She did.
I love just that part with Cinderella. We haven't really talked about her demeanor too much, but like she's in mud, basically. People have just ran by her. Her great night has been spoiled and over. And she just says, she looks up, she holds the slipper and she says, thank you. Thank you for everything. Like, mm-hmm. She's not bitter. She's not mad that it was over. She didn't blame anyone. She was so grateful for the few hours that she had to play a princess, to dance the night away, you know, to almost have her first kiss. And
that's a good point.
It's such a awesome moment that I think gets overlooked. But like, that's one of like the defining moments of her character to me, is just how in that moment of, you know, everything's over, she's grateful.
Hmm. Yeah, good point. And then we go into this, is the best part of the movie. Yeah, the act three, where you think it's all over, but the king has a plan. He's not going to kill. He's not going to execute the Grand Duke just yet. Well, the king doesn't know.
No.
He's like, how do I tell him? He's like, who? And for you, a knighthood. Here I am, you, sir. Well, good me. What is the name, sir? She got away. So a peculiar title, but if that's what you...
Really?
She... What? Why, you traitor! I tried to stop her. It was like she vanished into thin air. And he's trying to kill him this whole time.
Yes. Oh, it's so good.
And then he's slowly getting him back to his senses. What? What did you say? The prince, he said he would marry the girl who owns this slipper. He said that, did he? My boy, we've got it.
Hold it to him.
It's like this. He's been like this elusive unicorn, like escaping bullets to be, you know, caught, or in this case, married. It's like, oh my gosh, it's so good.
And the king has this great idea. He's like, oh, let's just find the girl who wore the slipper. And if anything goes wrong,
notify me immediately.
I mean, that was back with the ball, but it's one of my favorite. I guess I just love the banter between the king and the Grand Duke. And so the Grand Duke is again in a terrible task. He has to search the whole kingdom for a foot. Can you imagine how stinky that glass slipper got after so many feet?
No, it wouldn't have. Well, would it have gotten stinky considering it's glass?
Stinky. Stinky, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you heard it here.
You can trust me on that one. But I know about stinky shoes. But anyway, by the time he reaches the Tremaine residence, I love the animation here because he is dog tired. Announcing his Imperial Majesty the Grand Duke.
I love how Lady Tremaine takes advantage of him being super tired. She's like, shh, we don't want to interrupt his grace. And, you know, that gives her more time, basically, to try to make this work and shove the slipper on.
Yeah. I love the scenes where Anastasia and Drizella are trying so hard. And they're all lying about it, you know.
Your grace.
Your grace.
And they're all trying to fit the part and stuff, but they just can't do it. You know, one of them hides the rest of her giant foot in the dress, and then the other one, I'll make it fit. You know, and she fits it in, and it just, you know, and it does that. And so many close calls with the slipper breaking, because the Grand Duke is like, if I lose this, if this glass slipper breaks, I am truly dead. I don't know. Cool scenes, though, with the really, really tall, this is where the mice come in and they show their stripes.
They save the day.
They brave scalding hot liquid. They defeat Lucifer. And by the way, there's a little bit of a fuss online about the treatment of Lucifer. He didn't die. If a cat falls off of a roof, they are always going to survive because they're cats. And that's not just superstition. That is a fact of life. Plus, Lucifer is alive in the sequels and in the novelizations that come afterwards, the official Disney one. So he did not die. So anyway,
you read these official novelizations, cats, huh?
No. I checked online. I checked online beforehand. And,
well, and then cats do have 9 lives and they always land on their feet.
Yep.
So there you go.
And each cut has 9 lives, so that's 9 times 5. Anyway. But such a daunting task. You got to grab the key out of her pocket, but also there's at some point they almost get burned alive by the tea, and so stressful for a little mouse. And then they have to climb all those stairs. You would think in a movie like that they would get some magical mouse contraption, you know, and, you know, make it in the nick of time. But no, they really worked up all of those stairs. In classical Disney animation, this is my favorite scene, I think. One of my favorite scenes in all of Disney animation. Ooh. Where she comes down and she's like, wait, can I try it on? You know, and she's like, oh, she's just a peasant girl, blah, 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 blah. But the Duke knows, and he just pushes straight past her.
Yeah. And, my orders, every maiden.
Yeah, and he's like, motions towards the dude, and the guy's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get the slipper to him. You know, dun, 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 dun. And then Lady Tremaine does her ultimate act of subterfuge and trips him, and it just breaks. It just breaks. And they build this up so well that you might guess what's happening next, but you totally lose it because the movie really sells the hopelessness of the situation. He's like, oh, nothing can help, nothing. But you see, I have the other slipper, and boom, that moment there is one of the most golden moments in Disney animation, in my opinion, because you see Lady Tremaine's face, who has been so smug and so evil this whole movie. And then that one moment, it's half a second, but it's such a huge payoff when you see that she really got burned.
Mm-hmm. All these years I've been trying to push you up in the tower, and then in one day and one shoe you ruin it.
And then the glorious scene where they put it on and it's a perfect fit, and then the next thing you see is the wedding, I guess, is, or her triumphant ascension as princess. But man, that I think that moment where it all culminates into Lady Tremaine's look of sheer horror that she has been duped, and it just makes the whole movie pay off, and it's beautiful. Plus, the Grand Duke, he doesn't get executed.
Which is always a plus.
That is a really stressful weekend for him. Like, good gosh, I quit. There should have been a scene where he just quits. Anyway, we get the bum, 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 with the...
And then the bells, and then she loses her shoe again, and...
Yeah.
It's classic.
Oh, and the mice are all there to celebrate with her.
Throwing rice, which apparently is bad. You're not supposed to do that because the pigeons will eat it and they'll explode.
Yeah.
But is that really bad? Okay, never mind. But yeah.
Exactly. Right. You need to make room for better looking birds like parrots and stuff.
For grackles.
Bald eagles. Hello. We need more bald eagles in our world.
I have one last discussion before we end this. And that is, there are so many remakes of this movie. And people are going to be really upset if we don't.
Rags to riches kind of stuff.
Well, no, like direct remakes of Cinderella. And people are going to be really upset if we don't talk about the current one that's coming out with Lily James in 2015.
Yeah, what's there to say?
It's like 2 months away.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. I think
I am too.
From what I've seen, it looks really cool. And also seeing Helena Bonham Carter dressed as the fairy godmother, awesome. Hashtag awesome.
Mason's not impressed.
I mean, I'm kind of over Helena Bonham Carter. Whoa. But anyway.
All right. Then fighting words.
It's not really fighting words. I don't know. Maybe I'll see it. It depends on what Shanna wants. But
That's a good man.
I will always say that Ever After with Drew Barrymore is the greatest Cinderella adaptation besides the Disney one. It's great. I wish we could do a podcast episode on that. But anyway.
That was a good one.
I really do like that one. Not looking forward to the 2015 one, but, you know.
Well, then you also have, like, Into the Woods, and then my guilty pleasure, A Cinderella Story with Hilary Duff. These were all very, you know, good renditions, and they just keep making more of those. Why do we think that they keep making them?
I think reason why there's a lot of Cinderella adaptations, one, it's public domain, and two, it's just a classic fairy tale that people love. People love this story. It's just one of those, like, stories that people always go back to and try to remake and to do their own spin on it. Like, just because it's been done once doesn't mean it can't be done again. Maybe Disney already had their chance at it, but hey, why not? I'd like to see live action. I'm positive it's not going to be as good as this one, but whatever. I'll spend my money. I'll go see it.
Will it be as good as Ever After?
Probably not. That's a pretty deep film. I imagine this one's, based on the trailers, it's pretty straightforward, like almost a cut and dry adaptation from the film, from the, you know.
Yeah.
Well, not there's a few things that look to be different, but I don't think so. I'll really be surprised if this brings anything to the table different. Like, Ever After was just a completely different retelling and characters, and everything was so
Leonardo
different.
Da Vinci, people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, we shall see.
Did you or did you not lie to Her Majesty the King of England? Anyway, that's my one quote from the movie.
So, all right, guys, what do you rate this film?
It's rock solid. Yeah. I'm doing 4.5 stars. 4.5 stars because it doesn't reach the epicness of Lion King, which I consider the perfect Disney film and the greatest one that they ever did. But it is so close. And it managed to keep my interest as a kid, you know, as a boy, you know. I really appreciated the animation and the art. You know, it's definitely one of those classic animated films. 4.5 stars from Mason.
I'm going to give it 4 stars. I'm doing this thing now. I read this book called Blink with Malcolm Gladwell, and it talks about how many times our gut instinct is better than having tons of facts in front of us. And it's actually like we're right more percentage of the time if we just trust our gut. And, you know, I'm misindecisive. I flip flop. I'm back and forth. So I'm just going to go with my gut on things. So you're seeing a new Morgan in 2015. And I was kind of on 4 and 4.5 stars. And really, I had to go with 4 because I love this movie. I love the character. I love the songs, but I don't love the mice. Watching it this last time today, it was really a chore to get through, and I was so surprised at how much I just was kind of over the mice. They're fun and they're cute, and yes, they have fun songs, but it takes away from a movie that could be really epic. Like, the animation is beautiful, everything about this movie is great. Like, really, I mean, if I were being normal me, I would say this is 4.5 stars, but I think they just completely derail it. That for that reason, I have to give it 4 stars.
I really want, like, you know me, I would love to give every movie a 5 stars if I could, but I can't. This movie, my gut says 4.5. It just didn't quite, you know, hit that, you know, the golden note for me, the golden chord or something. I don't know. But it was so good. I love this movie. And it's easy to kind of really judge the classic fairy tales. It's still, at the end of the day, a classic before a reason. And it's really good. So I love this movie. So 4.5 stars for me.
All right, you heard it here first, folks. 4.5 to 4 stars. It's a good one.
Wow, all right.
Hurry, 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 Norma, help us in the valley, help us
out the valley, valley.
We got to get the ball.
Whoa, cut it with the scissors.
And I can do the sewing.
Leave the sewing to the women.
You go get some trimming.
And we'll make a lovely dress for Cinderella.
We'll make a lovely dress for Cinderella.
All right, so we have gotten rid of the mailbag section, but we did have a voicemail that I wanted to play, so I'll play for you right now.
Hey, Rotoscopers crew, this is Lauren, a.k.a. Cody the Maverick, and I've just finished listening to your Best of 2014 episode, and I'd like to thank you for answering my email on the show. Adding to the suggestions I made last time, here are a few more movies that I recommend you check out. First off, fitting with your Mice and Rats series, I'm surprised nobody mentioned The Tale of Despero. It was released in 2008, but has almost been completely forgotten by the animation community since then. As an animated film, it takes a lot of risks, such as having a muted color palette and being surprisingly dark in some places, despite being G-rated. It's not what you would normally expect from an animated film, but that's what makes the movie so interesting. However, it's much different from the original, much darker book by Kate DiCamillo, but in a good way, because I see the book and the movie as two different takes on a similar story. Next off are two of my favorite films of all time, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 1 and 2. The first Cloudy movie was directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who would later go on to direct the Lego movie. And Cloudy definitely has a very Lego movie feel to it, combining quirky humor and heartfelt servings, no pun intended. Cloudy 2 dips in quality just a tiny bit, but it's still a worthy successor to Cloudy 1. I mean, you can't help but love the foodimals that dominate the sequel. Now, I'm well aware that Mason is not very fond of Happy Feet, but me, I love both the original film and its sequel. Like Tale of Despero, Happy Feet 1 and 2 both take many risks, and as a result, they end up being a clever and charming film series. And speaking of Happy Feet, this leads me to my last film that I recommend, Kumba. It's a lesser-known film from Triggerfish Animation Studios, which is headquartered in South Africa. The film was sent direct-to-DVD in the U.S., despite having a theatrical release overseas, and though one may dismiss this film as Redbox fodder, it's actually quite good. The film is about a zebra named Kumba who was born with only half his stripes and sets out on a quest to end a drought that plagues his home. It feels very much like Happy Feet in Africa, but even if the story may seem familiar, the film is still good in its own right. That's all the suggestions I have for now, but you can bet that I'll be listening throughout 2015.
Give your little thoughts on Tale of Despero, which she says is largely forgotten by the animation community since it was released, which is true.
Mm-hmm. It is true. I caught part of it a few years back, and I thought it was really interesting. I kind of like, I don't know, fun animated films with little mice taking on the big world. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw parts of it where he's like in this weird arena taking down cats and he's all heroic and stuff. And I don't know. Thought it was cool.
So also, we did have two emails, one from Katie and one from the good old Joshua K. And so we're not doing emails anymore, but I want to just like say my thanks to both of them for sending in their thoughts. Basically, they gave us their little reviews of this movie. Katie said that she used to basically have this movie on repeat, and it's just a classic animated film that will live on forever in her minds, which is really cool. And then, of course, Joshua K., you know, he loves this, but he goes into more of a discussion of the sequels and what he would rate the sequels. So that is that. Thank you guys for sending in your emails. We appreciate it. And don't forget voicemails.
Cinderella, you're as lovely as your name. Cinderella, you're a sunset in a frame.
Though you're dressed in rags, you wear an air of queenly grace. Anyone can see you.
All right, guys, thank you for another amazing episode of the Animation Addicts podcast. This was a bibbidi bobbidi boolicious episode, if I say so myself.
And you do.
And I did.
All right, guys, we have one last announcement. So the podcast awards are opening up soon. On Monday the 19th, the podcast awards are going to be opening up for nominations. We need your help because last year we were nominated. We were so honored. But this year we want to win it. Before we can win it, we have to be nominated. So voting is really easy. So basically what you have to do, you just go to podcastawards.com and then you are going to go and you are going to vote for us in two categories. You're going to vote for us in Best Produced Podcast and movies and film. So two categories. That's it. You can only be in those two. And then you have to fill out a little thing at the bottom. So you have to give the name of the podcast, which is the Animation Addicts Podcast. You have to give the URL to find the podcast. That's rotoscopers.com/animationaddicts. And then you have to give them your email address, your name and email address. And this is an email address that is a real email address, not a fake email address, please, because they could possibly send you a verification a few days later to verify your vote. So basically, that's it. Voting will be open for 2 weeks, and this you can only vote one time, okay? So just this is for the nominations. And then what's going to happen is they're going to go through all the nominations. They're going to have an executive committee who's in charge of that. And then that executive committee is going to look at things based on number of votes received, quality of the website, quality of the show, quality of the audio. So it's not just number of votes that have been received. They're taking all the other factors into account, which was the same thing that happened last year. So hopefully if everything's the same, we should make it to the next and final round, which will happen on the 23rd of February. And on the 23rd of February, the voting's going to be open for 2 weeks. And that's where you can vote in every single category for your favorite. Hopefully by that point will be a nomination for Best Produced and Movies and Film. And then you can vote every single day. So right now, we just need your help starting on the 19th to nominate us. And then later in February, we need your help to vote. Of course, we're going to mention this on the next episode. In the next episode, we really, really, really would love to win this.
For show notes, links, and more, be sure to go to rotoscopers.com/85. That's where you can find all the links, everything for anything we talked about, whether it's an article or a YouTube video. There's also links to buy the videos there. You can buy Cinderella on Blu-ray. You can rent it digitally. All sorts of good stuff. And also on Twitter, when you're referring to this podcast, use the hashtag AnimAddicts. When you're referring to this specific episode, use the hashtag AnimAddicts85. You can also find us on Hypeable and Animated Views. Those are our friends over there. They're really cool, so go check them out. We love their sites. And also, you can find us on Stitcher Radio and iTunes. And we love it when you subscribe to us on iTunes, because that's one way that our show gets ranked. More people can find us. It's really, really awesome. In addition, if you like the show and you've subscribed, or even you haven't subscribed, but you like the show enough to leave us a rating, be sure to leave us a rating. We love it. We love it when it's 5 stars, but we love it when it's honest too. But you guys have so many 5-star reviews. It's really overwhelming. And thank you to everyone who has given us a review, because it's awesome. Also, you can find us on all sorts of social media, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram.
And yes, on Vine.
And on Vine, but we don't do much there. We just have it because we wanted to, you know, snag our screen name, basically.
But actually, I just got Vine, so I think I'm going to start taking over that account.
Oh, good. Please do. You can find Chelsea on our Vine. But speaking of Instagram, we just hit, you know, last week we hit 1,000 followers, which was really exciting. We've been a bit on and off with our Instagram. And really the reason why is because Instagram's really stupid and it makes you sign out of the Instagram account to log into another one. While Twitter, it's just like you hit a button and it will switch accounts and you don't have to like put your password in every time. So it's really frustrating for me personally to switch the accounts. And if anyone manages multiple accounts, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so the reason I bring that up is because we just had a really cool week's worth of giveaways, and we were just giving away all sorts of stuff, like limited edition music stuff, the Awesome Mix Volume 1 compact disc. No.
No.
Not the compact disc. You buy that everywhere. The cassette, you know, like tape that you see in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, we have the tape and we gave it away, and just really, really cool stuff. And we're going to be doing a lot of contests and other things on our Instagram, so be sure to follow us there. Also, if you guys want to get in contact with us, be sure to send us a voicemail at rotoscopers.com/voicemails. That is the way that you can send us your reviews, your thoughts, you know, your Morgan rants, anything. But also, if you don't want to call in using your computer, you can call in using your phone and dial the number 406-646-6575. That number has an unlimited voicemail, so you can basically talk as long as you want. The other one where you're recording on your computer, it's a minute and 30 second limit. However, if you go longer than that, just record multiple voicemails and we'll, you know, string them together. We're smart like that. So for sponsors, we love Amazon. I shop on Amazon basically every day. Yeah, yeah, it's not a good thing, but make sure to use the Rotoscopers Amazon affiliate link. That's at rotoscopers.com/Amazon. And we appreciate everyone who has been shopping using that link. Like, it's just such an easy way to support the show. You don't even know. Like, we get a little check every month and it really covers the costs of hosting and just different things to keep the site up and running. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, Audible, if you like listening to books on tape, well, speaking of tape, books on digital format, you can go to Audible and you can get a free audiobook. Really awesome. It's yours to keep forever. You can try out a 1-month trial of their service. I subscribe to Audible. I love it. I'm listening to 2 different books right now, and I love it because when I run out of podcasts, then I just have a, you know, 20 to 30 hour book that I can jump right into, and it's wonderful. So rotoscopers.com/audible for that. And also, if you'd like to sport your Rotoscopers pride, you can do that by going to our store. We have Rotoscopers t-shirts there. They are awesome. We love them. Rotoscopers.com/store is where you can find the t-shirts. We have a few signed ones, so definitely snag those before they disappear. And yeah, so Chelsea, bring up the topic of our next episode.
Okay, so guys, our next episode, I know we said that we were going to do Secret of NIMH after Cinderella, but then we got like this huge uproar of people saying like, we voted for Once Upon a Forest. What's up with that? So we're like, okay, I guess we actually have to do Once Upon a Forest.
It had the 3rd highest vote. And we basically pretended that it didn't exist.
We're like, no. So I guess we're going to hold up our end of the bargain and actually review that movie. So our next film is going to be Once Upon a Forest. So also in the best of episode, people are like, I love it when you guys record the bad movies too, because, you know, it's funny. And it is funny. Like, we had a lot of really fun times on some of those other ones. So it should be a hoot and a holler if we're lucky. So make sure to subscribe and be ready for that. And also send in your voicemails if you remember this movie, if you, you know, just sat down and watched it, you know, later tonight and then wanted to make your thoughts about it, let us know as well.
You can find us at our individual locations on the social medias. I'm at Morgan Stradling on Twitter and Instagram. Chelsea is at Chelsea Robson on Twitter, and also ChelseaRobson.com will take you to somewhere special. And Mason Smith, of course, is Mason SMTX. You can find him also at MasonSmithPortfolio.com. Check out his work. It's awesome. And hire him if you're interested and you're looking for people, because he's great. And also this animatedlife.blogspot.com is where you can find his animation rumblings and thoughts.
Rumblings?
Hey, when I'm in the moment of recording, I don't know if I use the right words. Excuse me, Mr. Lurker.
All right.
Ramblings? It's a rumble rambling, okay? It's a rumbling.
It's a rumble.
Anyways, all right, guys, until next time.
We are the Rotoscoperos.
What? That was like half
Wow,
French,
that was
half
crazy.
Spanish.
That was German, French, and Brazilian.
We're very inclusive here.
Oh.
We just did the outro, so if you want to take the intro, that's totally fine.
Very good. All right.
Classy.
Okay, that was a pretty solid nerdy couch discussion.
Absolutely.
The couch is feeling great.
See, sometimes we get really like actual nerdy on there and come up with really random things, but then sometimes it's
something
like
good, guys.
I'm gonna rename it the Ranty Couch Discussion.
Ranty Couch Discussion.
Oh man,
it's not always a rant though.
No, it's opinionated couch discussion. Hey, we're friends. We're sharing our opinions. No one's upset. No one was attacked. We just like to hear each other talk, which is why we have a podcast.
We just like to hear each other talk. Yeah. Well, I felt like that was a good nerdy couch discussion because only in, you know. I don't know. I don't want to say the only nerds care about like the perceptions of gender roles in animated films, but that one got pretty deep. We're good.
Mason, you're already getting like retweets and and people commenting. I tweeted, we need to have Mason SMTX redub Disney scenes and characters as Goofy on the YouTube channel. And Matt Chi says, I am so totally all for this.
Oh,
and
man.
The master says, oh my gosh, yes. For real, it's not even that hard.
Hardcore Mason fans out of the woodwork.
You don't even have to record yourself like video. We just throw on the scene and then you record.
You hear that, Mason? You don't have to show your ugly face.
That's exactly what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. My nephew and nieces got sugar gliders. You know what sugar gliders are?
No.
They are like these little, they're part of the possum family, and they've got like wings type, like their skin flaps.
This is
like
an animal,
yes.
Not a toy?
No, oh this is God. An animal. Google skin it right flaps. Now. Google sugar glider. And they got these things for Christmas, and they're like the size of your palm. And my sister-in-law was like, Santi, did you like the sugar gliders Santa got you? And he was just like, yeah, they're cool. I mean, he's like six. Yeah, they're cool. But I really wanted the Falcon, but you guys said it was illegal.
Oh, that's great.
I would love to get into falconing. Walking around town with a bird of prey. I'd be like Shun Yu. Who
yeah,
has
I'm like you and Shun Yu.
Now all of China knows you're here. Perfect. Anyway. Oh, you're perfect. And anyway.
Hello. Are we here? Are we all together? All together now. All together now. All together now. All together now.
Whoa, I think there's a hardcore delay going on.
Yeah, super delay right now. Can you hear me? Are we in the same dimension?
Yes,
we are in the same dimension, I think.